Now joined by a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo, co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast, the man with the secret to ordering fries at McDonald's. He has cracked the code. I'm going to try and get there. He is a friend of the program. He is Charles Robinson. Charles, what's up?
What's going on, brother? How are you doing today?
Good, dude. How about you?
Doing good. Hanging in. We're actually going to get some baseball, it looks like. So that's a big step forward, actually, for the NFL. I don't know if people really realize that, but the NFL has eagerly anticipated someone else rushing into the breach before training camp, and now they're going to actually get to see it happen.
That is interesting. All right, so if we have time, I'm going to chase you back on that and follow up on that. I want to first ask you, though, about Dak Prescott, because you have been all over that contractual situation. So what is your reaction to him signing that tag on Monday? And then realistically, how close are the two sides to a long-term deal?
I think it was tactical. You got Jamal Adams out here. People got on video saying, hey, I'm trying, bro. I'm trying to get to Dallas. And, there's been this flirtation with potentially going after trading for Jamal Adams from the New York Jets, going back to last year's trade deadline. And then people are like, well, geez, why would Dak sign his tender on day one, early rather than taking all the way to July 15th? I think there is some tactics in it by Dak Prescott's camp. And although when you franchise tag a player, that automatically counts against your cap, it does not count against negotiations. Until that player has signed that tag and it's locked in, it gives the team leeway to be screwy at the table. And if the Cowboys wanted to be cute and Dak Prescott hasn't locked in that money, they can play games in the media that, hey, maybe, I don't know, he hasn't signed it yet. That still leaves us the latitude to, we got Andy Dalton. If we wanted to pull the tag and maybe pursue Jamal Adams and go another route and devote that money elsewhere, we could still do that. Now, the Cowboys can do that? No, not in a million years. It's never going to happen. They're never going to pull the franchise tag off him. But negotiations have dragged and gone so badly at this point that I think Dak Prescott's camp is like, look, just put pressure on them. Look, let's lock in the money now. Let's tell them, okay, fine, we're fine playing on the tag right now, and take, $31+ million off their cap instantaneously. And that way, if they decide they want to pursue Jamal Adams, there's still a reality that a long-term extension for Dak Prescott is going to make a pursuit of Jamal Adams, or really anyone else, any other extensions on the roster, easier. So I think it's a tactical thing by Dak Prescott's camp just to say, you know what, we're here, we're going to take that money, we're going to play, we're going to show up. And if you want to do anything else with the roster, whether it's Jamal Adams or anyone else, you're going to have less money potentially to deal with, or at least bargain with us at the table. You can't play these games about, well, hey, we could still use that money elsewhere if we decide to pull the tag. That's gone now. Dak is in. The money's gone. The Cowboys got to figure out what they want to do now.
Charles Robinson is joining us. So you mentioned at the top that Major League Baseball is going to resume and the NFL is eager to see how that plays out. Of course, we've got all these issues as they relate to COVID. You had positive tests involving the Cowboys and Texans earlier this month. It includes Ezekiel Elliott. And then you've got the NFLPA advising that players do not work out together. So if they're advising that the players not work out together, what does that mean for practices and then for games down the road?
Well, I mean, it's something's got to change between now and the opening of training camp. And I've talked to a multitude of teams this week, kind of getting a feel for, what training camp could look like. And there's, wide-ranging conversations sort of about, the fan situation. And everyone's making this up as they go. Like every team. So I'll give you an example. I talked to a team yesterday morning. We were talking about, getting fans and like how would this even work? And this guy said to me, he's like, bro, it's more complicated than you even realize. And so he started to run me through the idea of, okay, well, if we allow our fans, we can be 50% capacity once training camp opens and we kick off a preseason game. He said, okay, if we have to socially distance 6 feet, is it 6 feet in every direction, left, right, up, down? So it's 6 feet. He said, what if four people from the same household show up? Do we socially distance them as well? Or do we, sorry about that. We got somebody's making a delivery. We have a situation where do we socially distance clusters?
Make sure it's
now?
No contact.
Yeah. And so it's like, and then he said, now we have to figure that out every game. Now we got to repeat that 9 times because we got 10 total games to deal with here. He said, so the matrix for this is going to change so rapidly, both with the roster, with fans. He says, never ending at this point. And the league is giving no advisement on this, particularly concerning, you know, the fans. So I would just say that right now, anything you hear about how practices are going to go, how fans are going to, all this is still up in the air, which isn't a good, I mean, we're almost at July here.
Right.
It's almost go time.
So it makes you wonder, right, is there no plan, or is the plan that there's not going to be fans in the stadium? But let me put that aside for a minute. Like, bottom line this, is there any doubt in your mind that an NFL season is going to be played on time and according to schedule that is currently laid out, or is that still up for debate?
I think, no, I don't. Look, the league, the way I think they're approaching it is this. Number one, do I think we could see a trimming of, say, preseason games? Yeah, you know, I think there's a possibility that if anything gets kind of bumped in terms of, like, risk mitigation, I could see the league saying, you know what, we're going to trim a preseason game. We're going to trim maybe 2 preseason games and at least try to mitigate risk that way. But when I talk to teams and I ask them why, you know, like, look, if this doesn't look like it can happen, I live down in Houston. It's spiking here. You got University of Houston players get together, you know, for some off-season workouts, and more than a dozen guys test positive all of a sudden. Why do this if you're going into July or August and this is how things are? And the sense I get is we're going to at least try. Like, I don't know that there's optimism. I would not say there's optimism. I would say there's probably pessimism. But I also, on the other side of that, get a sense of, you know what, we're going to give it a shot. Like, no one's going to say we didn't try to pull this off. And if it fails, you know, at the very least, it's going to fail in a way that we've contained it enough that it's not going to be total chaos. It's not going to be a train wreck. We're not going to be embarrassed. But we're going to be able to say to people, hey, we gave it a shot. It didn't work. And now we have to adjust. And if that means canceling the 2020 season, that's a bridge we'll cross, you know, when we come to it. But we're not going to have our fans or anyone else looking at us saying, you know, hey, you guys never even gave it a shot. You just threw in the towel. And again, I'll go back to baseball. I think that's why baseball is important. There's no doubt that everyone in the NFL wants to see someone take a shot at this first. Let's see what it looks like getting a team together. Let's see what it looks like, you know, potentially playing in front of fans. They want to see another league get this going a little bit to see maybe if there are some mistakes that get made that they can make sure they don't repeat.
All right, so quickly, this is what you get when you tune into your podcast with Torres. You guys never shy away from the tough issues. So break this one down for me. This is pretty hardcore. What is your approach when it comes to ordering fries at McDonald's?
All right, so look, I used to be a fry jockey when I was like 15 at McDonald's, and I tried to explain to people, this is, if you really want fresh McDonald's French fries, it's really simple. When you go through, you just say, I want fries with no salt. All their fries have salt on them. It means they have to make your fries fresh right then. Then when you get to the window and they give you your fresh fries that they made with no salt, then you just ask for packets of salt, and now you have fresh
fries.
Oh, dude. So that is the secret that I learned at 15 years old to getting fresh McDonald's French fries.
Oh, so that is such a power move. So when you were a fry jockey, if somebody did you like that, would you respect it or would you be pissed?
I mean, you weren't happy, but I mean, at the end of the day, let me put it to you this way. The worst fast food nightmares that you think of, like, hey, is someone doing something with my food? Nothing's ever going to happen to your fries. The fries are up front. Everybody can see the fries being made, so there's no chance anyone's tampering with your fries. I wasn't happy about it, but again, you know, you got to do what the customer asks, and, you know, salt's a big deal, but I would not revisit the restaurant after ordering fresh fries without salt and then asking for salt. Maybe change your next McDonald's.
Because they would know you. They would remember. So now I've got 60 seconds. As a fry jockey from In-N-Out, that's one of the most polarizing things ever. Where do you come out on In-N-Out fries? People either love them or hate them.
They're fresh. I mean, hey,
you
know, you get to see them bake. I mean, they're as fresh as possible. I'm fine with In-N-Out fries. The only fries that I can't stand, and again, this is I was telling Therese, I'm like, when you live in a household and your significant other has to agree on French fries with you, or it becomes like a long term issue. The only fries I can't stand, and we as a household can't stand, is skinny fries. So Steak and Shake, like the little skinny, crispy, nothing to them fry. Like I don't understand why people go through that process to make fries like that. So get rid of the Steak and Shake fries, worst fries ever. Fresh fries, great, but I maintain Five Guys fries, the best there is. Like, they're like carnival fries. You can't get any better than that.
Oh, clones, get at it. Charles Robinson, senior NFL reporter for Yahoo, co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. And that's why he is a very good friend of the program. Charles, good job, man. Thanks so much.